Okay, everybody. Hey, we got a few people online right now. Good to see everybody. We're also on Facebook simultaneously. That's a little bit better. If we put the light too low, then it just blinds me. All right. Welcome to the Sunday program, the Sunday virtual feast, virtual lecture, virtual kirtan, virtual deity worship, virtual devotee. Everything's virtual here. Prashadam, virtual prashadam, everything. So today is actually a very special day in the Vaishnava calendar. And it's the disappearance day of Srinivasacharya, also of Gadadhar Das Goswami, not Gadadhar Pandit Goswami. Gadadhar Das Goswami is the incarnation of the effulgence of Srimati Radharani. That's pretty interesting. So this morning in class, the devotee spoke about Srinivas, and didn't speak about Srinivasacharya, but spoke about Gadadhar. You can't hear? No, I'm the he can hear me. Well, I'll let you be able to hear me better in the temple. I'll put the mic here. That works better. Okay. So, can everybody else hear? Yes, everybody else is nodding. It's very clear. Thank you. So this is what I go through every day. So let me put everyone on mute so they can't disturb me. And we're ready to go. So thank you very much. This is a Sunday program. And what we're going to do this evening is talk about, I think we can talk about Srinivasacharya, one of the great acharyas of the second generation, from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and tell everybody his life story. Since this morning, Krishnapriya talked about Gadadhar Das and other personalities that appear today, and also talked about Gopashtami. Today in America, it's Gopashtami. That's the day that Krishna was given charge of the cows. Krishna and the cowherd boys were given charge of the cows. And just another story about Gopashtami was that Srimati Radharani and the gopis, some of the gopis, wanted to associate with Krishna, and it became so enthusiastic that they actually put on the clothes of cowherd boys so they could associate with Krishna. So it's a very special day in the Vaishnava calendar. But this evening we are going to speak about Srinivasacharya, and first we are going to chant the prayers to the departed Vaishnavas, as we do normally on these days. And Srinivasacharya is quite an important personality for many reasons. So we will chant right now. And those in the temple room can respond, but those online can't respond because of the delay. There's actually a delay. It doesn't sound good when the people respond online. It's in the final. Just like the right before the inside cover. Saparshita Gaura Viraha Vilapa, it's called. And it's written by Narottama Das Thakur, who is experiencing the separation from his dear friend Ramchandra Kaviraj, and therefore he decided to leave this world and write this poem. Yehani Lo Prema Janna Corona Prachur. Hey, no Prabhu Kota Gela Acharya Taku. Mora Saru Prupa Kahasanata. Kadasa Ragunatha Patita Pavaka. Bhata Juga Kagavira. Ekakale Kota Gela Goranata Rala. Pashane Kutibo Mata Annone vace po. Goranga gunera ne de kokta ge ne babo. Se sabat sangira sangi, je koino vilas. Se sangana paya. Kande Narata Mohudas. Ye anilo prema danda Karuna prachur. Jayacharya Thakur, Jayacharya Thakur. Acharya Thakur, Acharya Thakur. Jaya Acharya Thakur. Abhaya Chananada Bhattabananda Goswami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, ISKCON Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai, Namacharya Srila Huridas Thakur Ki Jai, Param Se Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidvaita Gadadha, Shiva Siddhi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai, Shri Shri Radha Krishna, Gopika Gopinath, Shyam Kun Radha Kunda, Giri Govardhan Kijai, Vrindavanam ki jai. Maturam ki jai. Jagannatha Swami ki jai. Yamunamai ki jai. Srimati Lassi Devi ki jai. Samaveda Bhakta Vrindi ki jai. Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bo. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada ki jai. My own Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasadaya Buddhale Srimadha Bhaktivananda Swami Namani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharni Nirvashesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Deshatarni. So I'm going to read the translation of this poem first. He who brought the treasure of divine love and was filled with compassion and mercy, whereas such a personality as Srinivasacharya God. Where am I, Swarup Damodar and Rupa Goswami? Where is Sanatan? Where is Raghunath Das, the savior of the fallen? Where am I, Raghunath Bhatta and Gopal Bhatta? And where is Krishnadas Kaviraj? Where did Lord Gauranga, the great dancer, suddenly go? I will smash my head against the rock and enter into the fire. Where will I find Lord Gauranga, the reservoir of all wonderful qualities? Being unable to obtain the association of Lord Gauranga, accompanied by all of these devotees, in whose association he performed his pastimes, Narottama Das simply weeps. So in our Vaishnava tradition, we commemorate both the appearance and disappearance days of great Vaishnavas. And one may say, why? Now, normally, for people who are not great devotees, great Vaishnavas, there is some commemoration of their passing, and that's like the Pinda, the Shraddha ceremony, and everything like that. And the reason for that, the Pinda and the Shraddha ceremony, is to keep your ancestors from going some other place which they shouldn't be going to, which we can't mention. It's a four-letter word, H-E-double-L. Got it. So, and to keep them in Pitri Loka. So, in every religion, there are actually these different ceremonies on the anniversary of someone passing away. Even religion that I was brought up in, on the anniversary, you would light a lamp and actually even leave a plate of food out for the person. So it's very similar to the Indian tradition. Very, very similar, and pray for the person. However, when we're talking about the passing away of great devotees or devotees, we're not celebrating or commemorating or remembering to help them from going to hell. We're commemorating to help us from going to hell, which is interesting. It's the opposite, isn't it? Think about it for a second. Because by remembering them, they're manifest, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur states. He's reasons ill who says the Vaishnavas die when thou art living still and sound. So the Vaishnava is always there by his remembrance, and because we remember the Vaishnava, we get purified. So it's a completely different reason. And also the glorification of a Vaishnava is inspiring for us. How is it inspiring for us? Because it reinforces our faith in Krishna consciousness. You know, it's one thing to read about Krishna. Like today, we mentioned before, it's Gopashtami. And I think, oh, I don't see her picture anymore, but she was one of the gopis today. Champaka was one of the gopis. I wanted to show her to everybody online, but she's not. Her gopi outfit. Oh, there it is. Okay, let me just, so you see what Gopashtami is. Whoops, I suppose the spot, there she is. There's one of the gopis who dressed up as a coward boy. You see? I spotlighted her. Anyway, that's Champaka. All right, so let me put me on again. And I'm not one of the gopis, so you don't have to worry about that. So anyway, getting back to the point. So by hearing about these particular individuals, it reinforces our faith because these are people who were on the Earth planet during recent recorded history. You know, you hear about Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill, you know, over 5,000 years ago. Okay. Put it on Facebook, and who put it on Twitter? You can imagine. put it on Twitter or Facebook. But anyway, so you can imagine, you know, it's wonderful, but it's really so, you know, so much in a different world than we're in right now. Completely different world. Or you read the Bhagavad Gita, which talks about Arjuna, and you read the Mahabharata, which details the whole story, and just amazing things happening there. It's hard to relate. But when you read about these great Vaishnavas or hear about them, then it really brings it down to earth. You know, really what Krishna consciousness is. And we've mentioned this many times before in regard to Srila Prabhupada's life. That's why I suggest that everybody, when they first come to Krishna consciousness, that they read extensively about Srila Prabhupada's life, because he is Bhagavad Gita, and you've heard me talk about this before. He's Bhagavad Gita in action, you know, in the modern world, what it means to be a devotee of Krishna, what it means to confront one's doubts, what it means to surrender to Krishna in the modern world. You know, Prabhupada's a perfect example of that. So make sure we're still online. I got to be careful because what happens is that the internet goes down here. Uh-oh. Someone sent me a message. Okay, they can still hear me. Just want to make sure that it's... Give me one second. Yeah. As long as I can see movement in the pictures, we're still online. Okay, so Prabhupada's an example. And so these devotees like Srinivasacharya and his, let's say, godbrother Narottama Das Thakur and Shyamananda, who are the second generation from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we can relate to them in a very real sense because they're in the recorded history. This is recorded history right here about what Srinivasacharya did. So let's talk about Srinivasacharya. This is very inspiring to me, his whole pastime life, etc. So, Srinivasacharya, this is getting first to his father. His father's name was Ganga Dhara Bhattacharya. And his father later on became known as Chaitanya Das for a very interesting reason. And Ganga Dhara Bhattacharya was married to his wife, of course, usually married to your wife, Lakshmi. His wife's name was Lakshmi Priya. Well, you never know nowadays. So, and he lived on the Ganges. So he went to see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu right when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was getting ready to take sannyas. And, of course, it was Keshava Bharati, Lord Chaitanya's sannyas guru, who was going to give him sannyas. And sannyas, of course, for those of you who don't know what that means, it means basically shaving your hair and living a very simple life and giving up all personal accoutrements and just dedicating your life 100% to the service of Krishna. That's what sannyas means. It's actually called Tridandi sannyas. Tridandi means basically three sticks, but referring to the mind, body, and words dedicated to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So when Lord Chaitanya came to, was going to take sannyas, thousands of people were there to watch him. And Gangadhara Bhattacharya came to see Lord Chaitanya taking sannyas. But when he saw that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's beautiful hair was shaved off, he became overwhelmed with, sorrow, just like Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's barber who actually shaved his hair off. His name was Madhu. He was actually reluctant to shave Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's hair because Lord Chaitanya had beautiful, beautiful long hair. And but Gangadhara Bhattacharya, he became so filled with remorse and ecstasy in combination of the two that he started just chanting Lord Chaitanya's sannyas name, which was Chaitanya. Chaitanya, Chaitanya, Chaitanya. Interesting thing about Gaudiya Vaishnavism, that the word Chaitanya is normally a name for a brahmachari. It's a brahmachari name in the Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Whereas many devotees actually keep their brahmachari names when they take sannyas. And some devotees, they take a name that's prefaced by bhakti. And you've seen that, like Bhakti Churu Maharaj. And what was his name before? Kishore. Yeah, Kishore. And so, but myself, I just kept my Brahmacharya name, my previous name, when I took sannyasin, and many other people did, and some people Prabhupada gave bhakti name to. And generally, that was the system. Although many cases, people insisted on their original name just to maintain, you know, some humility like that. And Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu blessed the barber Madhu that he would never have to cut anyone's hair after that point. And Madhu was able to maintain his family after that. And Gangadhara Bhattacharya, crying out the name Chaitanya, Chaitanya, Sri Krishna, Chaitanya, which was Lord Chaitanya's sannyas name. And he couldn't stop chanting it. You know, everybody thought he was like a madman at that particular point. But that's ecstasy. Spiritual ecstasy means that one becomes so immersed in happiness, and that's called Vyabhachari Bhava, is the technical Sanskrit name, that one cannot even think clearly at that point. I mean, of course, that doesn't continue forever and ever, but it happens at certain intervals, and then one regains their normal, let's say, peaceful state of consciousness. So anyway, he was crying, then he went back home, and finally he decided to visit Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in Jagannath Puri. He arrived in Jagannath Puri, and he and his wife greeted Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They were crying tears of joy. And Lord Chaitanya said to him something very interesting. This is a quote from the biography. Jagannath is delighted that you have come here. Go and take darshan of him. He said, the lotus-eyed Lord, that's Lord Jagannath, the deity in the temple in Jagannath Puri, is ready to satisfy your innermost heart's desire. The Lord is supremely merciful. In order to receive his mercy, you have come a long way, and he wants to satisfy your heart's desire. Go now and take darshan of Lord Jagannath. So, Sri Chaitanya Das, who was previously Gangadhara Bhattacharya, went to take darshan of Lord Jagannath, and Govinda, Lord Chaitanya's servant, went with them. And they wept when they saw Lord Jagannath, and they followed Lord Chaitanya's directions and went back to see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, knowing what was in their heart, said to them that the desired son of you and your wife shall soon appear. Srinivas will be his name, and he will be a greatly beautiful child. And this is Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu predicting what would occur with the son of Chaitanya Das and his wife even before the son was born, or probably even before the lady was pregnant. It's amazing. He said, through Rupa Goswami and Sanatan, I will manifest the Bhakti Shastras. And through Srinivas, all these Shastras will be distributed. Should return immediately to home, to Gaudadesh on the bank of the Ganges. And so they, of course, they returned home. And after some time, a child was born of this divine couple. And they gave him the name Srinivas. And Lakshmi Priya, that's the mother, had a father who was an expert pundit, an astrologer, that means. And he predicted that from her womb, a great soul, a Mahapurush, would soon take birth. And so on the full moon day in the month of Vaishaka, in the constellation or nakshatra of Rohini, which is actually very important, this great personality took birth. And it's described he had a complexion like that of molten gold, like that of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He had a long nose, his eyes extended to his ears. These are all symptoms of a Mahapurush, or a great person. Whoops. I guess you got to go. Yeah, turn the volume up more. These are all symptoms of a great personality. I mean, some symptoms are like having eyes like lotus petals that appear to go almost to your ears. And another symptom is having, Another symptom is having long arms that when you stand up, the arms actually go below your knees, like a ditcher. So these are different symptoms by which one can tell if someone is a, let's say, a born Nichisiddha devotee. Of course, it's not a symptom that you can utilize to tell if one's not a born Nichisiddha devotee, because sometimes people who are Nichisiddhas are born in different families. But this is a very special sign, like you see in Shukadeva Goswami when he was born. He also had all these signs, and many other, of course, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So anyway, so he had all the signs of a great personality, and they taught the child the chanting of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's name, Gora, Gora, Goranga, like that. And he was taught the Bhakti Shastras. His father, Srinivas's father, passed away. And they did their best, the devotees did their best to console him, but he was unconsolable. So he started a fast, would not drink. Of course, fasting means not eating food. And he left his home and arrived at his grandfather's home. And he began to associate with some of the saintly persons at his grandfather's home. Some of the saintly persons were associates of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He can only think at that particular point of taking shelter at the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he grew very eager to go to Jagannath Puri to see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So then he took shelter of this great devotee known as Narahari Sarakara Thakur and in Sri Khanda, and he fell at the feet of this great devotee and wept tears of ecstasy upon seeing this great devotee. And Narahari Saraka instructed him, you should wait until the devotees go to Jagannath Puri, and this way you'll be able to accompany them to see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then he got his mother's permission too. So then, after some time, he arrived in Jagannath Puri. But when he arrived in Jagannath Puri, of course, he discovered that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had already left this world. And so he went to see Gadadhar Pandit Goswami, and they were both weeping in separation from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So then he went to see Ramananda Roy, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Prakeshwar Pandit, the great dancer, Paramananda Puri, Sikamahiti, some of the great associates of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All these devotees were very, very, very happy. And the devotees knew that Lord Chaitanya had left important instructions for Srinivasacharya. So he wanted to study, at this particular point, he wanted to study the Bhagavatam from Gadadhar Pandit Goswami. So Gadadhar Pandit Goswami pulled out the copy of the Bhagavatam that he had, and the copy of the Bhagavatam he had was all smeared from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's tears, so it was illegible. So Srinivasacharya decided, I am going to go and get another copy of the Bhagavatam and bring it. He went to Bengal to bring another copy. And when he came back, he discovered that Gadadhar Pandit Goswami had already left this world too. And so he was immersed in so much, let's say, pain, and a pain of separation from Gadadhar Pandit Goswami. And then he decided to go back to Bengal. And when he arrived in Bengal, he heard that Lord that Advaitacharya and the Jananda Prabhu had also disappeared. So he was his whole story is confronting the disappearance of these great personalities just before he reaches a particular locale. So his mood in worship is one of intense separation. And as we mentioned before, when we're feeling separation from some great Vaishnava or from Krishna, we're actually associating with that great Vaishnava. And actually separation is more intense, obviously, more intense than meeting, and it brings one closer with a spiritual personality than with actual meeting the personality. Because what determines the closeness that one has with a spiritual personality is one's intensity of emotion, intensity of devotion. So then Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Advaitacharya appeared to Srinivasacharya in a dream and told him, basically, you should go to Vrindavan and study with Jiva Goswami. So after taking a tour of Sridham Mayapur, that is Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance place and place of pastimes, then Srinivasacharya decided, before going to Vrindavan to associate with Srila Jiva Goswami, to take shelter of Vishnupriya, who was the widow of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Vishnupriya actually gave him the order to go to Vrindavan. And not only that, she put her lotus feet on his head and blessed him with Krishna consciousness. It's described here that Srinivasacharya fell on the earth with tears of ecstasy at Vishnupriya's lotus feet. And Vishnupriya fed him some prasadam. And Vishnupriya, of course, we know was very austere, executing great penances upon the departure of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which described that she would eat one grain of rice for each mantra that she chanted. I mean, some devotees say that she ate one grain of rice for each round, but I don't think that's too practical. My understanding was that each mantra she chanted of the Hare Krishna mantra, she would put aside a grain of rice, and at the end, and then he also went to of Sita Devi, who was Advaitacharya's wife. Sita Devi was very thin, feeling separation from her husband, Advaitacharya. And he also associated with Vasudha and Janava, the wives of Lord Nityananda, and Birchandra, the son of Lord Nityananda. So anyway, there's so many stories of him getting association, we want to skip ahead to Vrindavan. So soon he arrived in Mathura, and the first thing he did in Mathura was taking bath in Vishramghat, which is actually the place where Akrura bathed on the way to Mathura, bringing Krishna to Mathura, and actually on the way to Vrindavan. This is also described that Sri Krishna rested here also after slaying the demoniac king Kamsa. It's called the place of rest. So then he visited Krishna's holy birthplace, the Adi Keshava deity in Mathura, and turned towards Vrindavan. And there in Vrindavan, he met or heard that many of the Goswamis had actually passed away, like Raghunath Das Goswami and other devotees had just passed away, as well as Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami. So again, he was overcome with pain, understanding he would never get a chance to associate with these great personalities. There's some biographies that describe he had a dream and Rupa and Sanatan appeared to him and pacified him and told him to continue and take shelter of Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami, of course, was the most erudite practically of any scholar in India. And there's divisions or schools in different universities that are named after him, philosophical schools. So Srinivasacharya took shelter of Srila Jiva Goswami. There's many stories about him in this particular biography I'm making reference to. And also met Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who was still there. And Gopal Bhatta Goswami agreed to initiate Srinivasacharya in Krishna consciousness. So the initiation of Srinivasacharya occurred at the Radharaman temple. Gopal Bhatta Goswami gave him mantra diksha, that means the Gayatri mantra. And the day after he was initiated, Srinivas was sent to study, actually was sent first to Radhakund and to see the place where Raghunath Das Goswami used to stay. And there he found Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, who was writing the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and other devotees like Raghava Pandit, who was in Krishna's pastimes, Dhanishta. Mm-hmm. and many other great devotees. For 3 days, he stayed in Radhakund and enjoyed the pastimes of Radha and Krishna there. And then he went to see Jiva Goswami, and Jiva Goswami taught him the Srimad Bhagavatam and the other scriptures of the Goswamis. And he became very expert in the study of the Vaishnava literatures. Then he was given the title Acharya by Jiva Goswami. Now, if you're given the title Acharya by Jiva Goswami, you know that you've gotten it made, because Jiva Goswami is, as I said before, the most erudite scholar practically of all time. I mean, his the Sandarbhas, the Shat Sandarbhas, are just a complete exposition of every aspect of philosophy, beginning with epistemology. In other words, how do you know what you know, which is in the Tattva Sandarbha, beginning to the ending up with the topmost understanding, the Priti Sandarbha, like that. Srinivasacharya also began to associate with Narottama Das Thakur and Shyamananda. And they were taken around Vrindavan on the Brajmandal Parikrama by Raghava Pandit, who I mentioned before was Dhanishta in Krishna's pastimes. And Raghava Pandit was actually Champaka Lata. Let me make sure we're still online here. Yeah, we're still online. In Krishna's pastimes. So there's one other source of information about Srinivasacharya. It's in the Bhakti Ratnakara. And it discusses how Srinivasacharya and Narottama Das Thakur wandered through the 64 Kroshas of Mathura. After wandering for some time, they returned. And at that time, Shyamananda Prabhu joined them from Gaudadesh, and they got educated in Krishna consciousness. Skipping ahead a little bit. The three of them were very, very renounced. And eventually, Srila Jiva Goswami wanted them to go on book distribution. They were the original book distributors. And at that time, they didn't have printing presses, at least there in India, they didn't have printing presses. All the scriptures were written by hand. So the original books of the Goswami books were kept in a trunk on an ox cart and brought all the way from the Braj area, Vrindavan area, all the way back to Bengal to have copies made so they can be distributed to all the devotees there. So they were on their way back. But on the way back, they had to pass through a particular town known as Vana Vishnupura, or a particular kingdom known as Vana Vishnupura. Now, this Vana Vishnupura was ruled over by a king named Virahamvira, which is very interesting, because the word Vira is used twice. Vira means like heroic or strong. So he was really strong king. Just like Prabhupada gave me the name Beer, but actually Beer is the Bengalicized pronunciation of Vira. So Vira means strong. Yeah. Yeah, because there's no such word in Sanskrit as beer. It's usually hear the word in English for people who like to get intoxicated. But but in Bengali, you pronounce the V's as B. Like if you're talking about Vrindavan, Prabhupada would say Vrindavan, isn't it? Instead of Vraj, Vraj. So it's a different type of pronunciation. But anyway, his name was Virahamvira. And this king, oh my God, I shouldn't make a political statement. I got to keep myself from making a political statement. It was much like many modern leaders that we know nowadays. He was a thief, rascal, would lie a lot and everything like that. I didn't make a political statement. So anyway, so he was pretty bad. He was just interested in making money and subverting the rule of the courts. So anyway, this Virahamvira, he was the leader of a bunch of dacoits. Dacoits means criminals. Gunda, as you would say in India, or mafioso, as we would say in Italy. So he was a mafioso king. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? Anyway, so he also was quite more adept than modern day kings and presidents, because he also had many astrologers with him who could tell where the money was. So he didn't open up any golf clubs that went bankrupt. So, indirect references here. So anyway, so he knew where money was. So his astrologers came to him one day, and then they were actually good at telling the future, and they said, there's a party passing through your kingdom that has a great treasure in a trunk. And all they could see was a great treasure. They didn't know the great treasure were the books. So anyway, so he ordered his dacoit men, his cabinet, to actually steal the trunk full of the books. So in the middle of the night, when no one was looking, they actually stole the trunk, and he was so happy. Oh, now I've gotten a great treasure. So he kept it in his storehouse, and one day he actually opened it up, and he saw that there were actually he thought there were going to be jewels in there, but many, many books that were handwritten, especially by Srila Rupa Goswami and the other Goswamis. And it's described that the Goswami's writings look like rows of pearls on a thread. They were so beautiful. I mean, their handwriting was exquisite. Have you ever seen Srila Rupa Goswami's palm leaves, which he wrote on? It was extremely exquisite. So, Srinivasacharya and Narottama Das Thakur and Shyamananda became very discouraged when the books were stolen. And Srinivasacharya was informed that this is a plan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In fact, it was a plan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because at night, the king opened the chest containing the books, and he removed the cloth that covered what was beneath, and then he saw the books of the Goswamis. And as he mentioned before, the beautiful handwriting of Srila Rupa Goswami. And just seeing the books, just like we talk about with our book distribution, the Aditya and Narayan were like this, just by touching the books, he became purified. And he placed the books back within the chest, and that night he had a dream. In his dream, he saw a beautiful person whose body glowed with an effulgence. And of course, that was Srinivasacharya. Smiling, and he said, "Don't worry, soon I shall come and meet you. And then your joy shall be unceasing. Life after life, you are my eternal servant." Pretty interesting story. So then the king began to worry, thinking, "Boy, I have actually committed a great offense against these devotees." Or throne room or wherever he was. And Srinivasacharya wanted to go there also and give a Bhagavatam lecture. So he went there while the king's pundit was giving the lecture, and Srinivasacharya corrected the lecture given pundit and spoke from the Bhagavatam. The king was just like completely overwhelmed. Whoops. The king was overwhelmed hearing from Srinivasacharya, and he explained to Srinivasacharya that about the books, and he returned the books to Srinivasacharya, and then he and his wife took initiation from Srinivasacharya, and they turned their whole kingdom into a Vaishnava kingdom, and that's the kingdom of Anavishnupura. So that's the first part of the story. And after some time, Srinivasacharya actually got married. His mother actually told him to get married. And you see, he was an obedient son, which is interesting. He got married, and of course, I'm going to turn that off. He actually had a daughter who actually became a guru later on. And we're not going to tell that story. So there's a whole elaborate description in this book about his wedding. So, and then Srinivasacharya met Ramchandra Kaviraj, and he initiated Ramchandra Kaviraj as one of his primary disciples. And Ramchandra Kaviraj did great service too for Gaudiya Vaishnavism. And let's see if there's anything else interesting about Srinivas Acharya. Oh, yes. Srinivas Acharya was also known for his internal service to Radha and Krishna. He would sometimes go into deep meditation and even bring things out back from the spiritual world. Sometimes he'd bring garlands back from the spiritual world after he went into meditation. Another time, Srinivas Acharya was meditating for about 3 days. He didn't come to external consciousness. And his disciple, Ramchandra Kaviraj, was sent to ascertain why the guru was not coming back to external consciousness. And so Ramchandra Kaviraj sat down next to his spiritual master and entered into the same meditation, the same trance as the spiritual master. And they were looking for something that Radharani had lost, like an anklet. And they both found this, and they came back together out of the same meditation. So this is one proof that the internal life or internal devotee life is actually just as real, actually more real than the external life. Anyway, so this is basically the story of Srinivas Acharya. Let's see if there's any stories about his departure from this world. There's many, many stories in this book. Let's see. He departed, of course, in Vrindavan on this particular day. Okay. So, does anyone have any questions about Srinivas Acharya? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have the original scripts, many of the original scripts are preserved to this day. Many of the original writings of Rupa Goswami are preserved, and they've been photographed or digitized, as you may say, so the devotees can actually make reference to them and read them, many of them. And when I first went to Vrindavan in 1971, 72, whatever it was, we went to this Vrindavan Research Institute, which is right in the middle of the city of Vrindavan, and I was able to see many of these palm leaves written by Srila Rupa Goswami. So yes, we have references. And also, there's this place called the Bhaktivedanta Research Institute. You've heard about that before? That's in Calcutta, where a lot of the works of these great acharyas, like Srinivas Acharya, Jiva Goswami, and other, the original works are preserved, as well as the works of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and other acharyas in our line of disciplic succession. This is one of ISKCON's big projects. This my godbrother Harishari Prabhu was the one who founded this. And right now, of course, he's not in good health. So he has other devotees who have taken over. You can go and visit. Yeah, he has the handwriting of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And if you go online, there's some scanned versions, digitized versions you can see. So it's actually quite a wonderful endeavor to preserve the handwriting and the direct writings of these acharyas, and also Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and many of the acharyas in our disciplic succession. And not only that, the some of the original Puranas are preserved there too. When Prabhupada was on the planet, east to South India, preserve them. I forget what was the name of the project. I think it was a matcha project or something like that, you know, the fish. I forget what project. But Prabhupada actually assigned the devotees to go and photograph works of the Goswamis. Yeah, a lot of the original works, not of the Goswamis, but of the original Sanskrit works like the Puranas. Like you find Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he went to South India, he discovered the parts of the Brahma Sangita. And that had been lost for some time. And then he had it copied. And because of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we have access to the Brahma Sangita. Otherwise, we wouldn't have access to it. And also some of the Puranas, there was this whole story about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met this Brahmin in South India who was fasting. Even when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to his house for prasadam, he didn't feed Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because he was fasting because Sita had been taken by Ravan. The story is there in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He was feeling so much remorse because the universal mother Sita has been taken by Ravan. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu assured him that Sita could never be touched by Ravan. Ravan would have died immediately had he touched Sita Devi. And then Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I think it was the Kurma Purana. Yeah, he discovered part of the Kurma Purana in which his story of what he told this Brahmin was actually verified. That Sita Devi was under the care of Agni Dev, and there was Maya Sita. And so then this Brahmin gave up his fasting and started to eat prasadam again. So you find that many of these literatures, they're quite old and they haven't been preserved properly. And so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had some of them preserved or copied, and Srila Prabhupada wanted us to actually preserve many of these ancient literatures, Sanskrit literatures, not just the Bengali literatures. Okay? Any other questions? Yes, Madhava.
So how to understand that Srinivasa Acharya was part of Panchatattva and Goswami was there before?
He wasn't part of Panchatattva. Srinivasa Acharya was. Actually, you're asking a good question because Srivas Thakur is part of the Panchatattva. Srivas. So there's a difference between Srivas and Srinivas. Yeah. Srivas, of course, is an incarnation of Narada Muni who appeared with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Srinivas is different. And Srinivas is second generation after Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Of course, first generation of the six Goswamis in Vrindavan, like Rupa and Sanatana and Raghunath, Jiva Goswami, Gopal Bhatta, Gopal Das Swami. So, and then Srinivas Acharya, as we just read, took initiation from Gopal Bhatta Goswami. So he's second generation. All right. And it's interesting that many of our Acharyas were married. And they functioned. There's no indication that Srinivas Acharya actually took sannyasa at any particular juncture. And even his daughters were gurus, which is really interesting. Of course, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's wife, Janava Mata, was guru also in our sampradaya. So you find lady gurus, you'll find people who are married. And in general, you'll find that most of the gurus, if you look at Vaishnava history, were actually married, not sannyasis. Because the reason for that, there's a good reason for that, because in general, the guru would stay in one place and the sannyasis wouldn't stay in one place to train up the disciple. So it was actually more practical for a guru to be a grihastha because he would train the disciples up in his own ashram or in his own house or in a village type of situation. So what you're seeing now in ISKCON with sannyasis, being primarily the gurus, and we have grihastha gurus too, is really not something that has been done so much before. Before Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, like you have Bhakti Vinod Thakur who was guru. You have Narottama Das Thakur, who was not a sannyasi. He wasn't married either, but he was not a sannyasi. You have so many personalities, what to speak of Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva, who's the author, I wouldn't say author, but the compiler of the Vedic literatures, who was married. Lord Nityananda, yeah. Lord Nityananda. So, Kiva Vipra Kiva Nyasi Shudrakina Nai. Ye Krishna Tattva Veda. Well, ladies being gurus, yes, why not? Someone knows about Krishna, anybody can be guru. And someone says, well, what about children? And I say, yes, children can become guru too. Look at the four Kumaras. Lakshmi is the head of one of the sampradayas, right? Lakshmi, the Sri Sampradaya. And actually, I think that's probably the most prominent Sampradaya of Vaishnavas in South India, the Sri Sampradaya. Sri means Lakshmi. So there are so many instances. You have Lord Shiva, who is an Avaduta. He's the head of his Sampradaya, right? And Lord Brahma, who is married. He's the head of Har Sampradaya. So you have so many instances. The main thing is someone knows the science of Krishna, not just knows theoretically, but knows practically. What's that? Well, the word acharya means one who sets an example. And it also can mean, in a larger sense, one who's the head of a whole branch of a sampradaya. Like we say, Prabhupada is the founder acharya. Now, sometimes I say that means acharya with a big A. We're meant to be acharyas. I mean, I know it's not exactly precise linguistically, but we're meant to be acharyas with a little a. Little a means good example. Like achar and prachar. Like speak nicely, act nicely. So we're meant to act nicely. Yad yad achar. Like Krishna says in the Gita, you know, famous verse, yad yad acharati shreshtas. Tat-tat evetarojanahai. Someone acts who is a leader, everyone follows that particular example. So we're meant to set good examples. Or another point Prabhupada made was example is more important than precept. In other words, how you act is more important than what you say. So that's really the meaning of acharya right there. But in terms of the big A acharya, it means the head of a sampradaya, or the head of a branch of the sampradaya, like Prabhupada. Founder acharya. Now Thakur is a Paramahamsa name. Although it's interesting, in Gujarat, sometimes you'll find someone with the name Thakur Bhai, right? Brother Thakur. Everyone has the name Bhai. Babu Bhai, Thakur Bhai, Dhiru Bhai. What? Mani Bhai. Yeah, Hiro Bhai, Diamond Bhai, right? So anyway, so Hiro Bhai. So sometimes it's used as a common name, but actually as a title, it's perhaps the most exalted title. Like we say, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. That means that Paramahamsa. It's like saying Parabhajakachar Paramahamsa. Like we say, when we're offering reverences or obeisances. Parvajakacharya, Paramahamsa, Paramahamsa, Parvajakacharya, right? So it's a very exalted title. So, any other questions or comments? Questions, comments? Yes. Who? Oh, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu found it. Do you remember where he found it? Adikeshava Temple. That's right, Adikeshava Temple. See? They know. So the Adikeshava Temple in South India. And then he had it copied. And then he... who has written the original? Well, it's Lord Brahma speaking it. Well, it's obviously written by someone. I mean, because previously in our sampradaya, there was no need of writing because everybody was Shruti Dara, able to remember things just upon hearing them once. And we don't know who wrote it, no. No, I mean, even Srila Vyasadeva, I mean, you have that whole story that's told by some, by him reciting the Vedic literatures to Ganesh and Ganesh's writing. And anyway, in the Mahabharata, that story is told quite extensively. That really 5,000 years ago, you didn't have to write those things down. Four original Vedas were passed down through memorization. They were always memorized. And that's why they're called Shrutis. Because not only were they memorized, but the meter in which they were chanted was memorized too. And you had who just had the duty of correcting mantras, and he had another Brahmin who would give the correction, another Brahmin who would stop and say, you've made a mistake, and a third Brahmin would say, well, here's the real pronunciation of that particular mantra. So you had like two extra Brahmins in addition to the Brahmin who was reciting the Vedic mantra. We're talking about the Rig Veda, Samaveda, Yajur, and Atharva Veda, because those were meant to be memorized exactly. So the Rig, Atharva, Yajur, and Samaveda are there, all of them, the four of them, are there in their original form. Whereas some of the Puranas, because they were not passed down in exactly the same way, you know, their histories, Itihasa, Purana, are not in their original form. You'll find the Sanskrit. That's why the some Indologists, they try to date the Vedic literatures by the type of Sanskrit that's being used. I mean, because Sanskrit, like any other language, has undergone changes through the years. There's actually this whole branch of linguistic analysis called glottochronology, in which you try to ascertain the age of a particular literature by the type of language that's being used. I mean, for example, I can pick up Shakespeare and tell you, without even knowing that Shakespeare wrote some certain number of hundred years ago, when that type of language was being spoken. So as far as the Puranas are concerned, they're actually written in a more modern version of Sanskrit. That's not because they are more modern. I'm actually giving you the information whereby you can deal with people who say the Puranas are more modern, because they're not more modern. They're just as ancient as the original four Vedas. However, the language is different because they were passed down not verbatim, they were passed down in essence. In other words, like the Itihasa. Itihasa means like a story, like a, whoops, what happened? Your symptom of ecstasy? Or? I said, wow. That's called a Vyabhachari Bhava. So the Puranas, many of the Puranas were passed down like stories. You understand? And so they're not in their original form. Of course, the Bhagavad Purana has been passed down verbatim, but many of the other Puranas, and especially the Mahabharata, has not been passed down verbatim. Right? The Mahabharata, there's something like, ooh, I think 80-something versions of the Mahabharata. And some of them differ, not in the main story, but differ because of the details from one another. Well, Vyasadev, it's interesting you're asking that question, because Vyasadev spoke the Bhagavatam to Shukadev Goswami, but then after that you had Shukadev Goswami do certain things, like speak the Bhagavatam to Maharaj Parikshit, and after that you have Sutta Goswami reciting the Bhagavatam to the sages at Naimisharanya, headed up by Shonaka Rishi. And so you have a whole history there. As far as it was when it was actually the whole thing compiled, I think the Bhagavatam can be considered almost like a living work, if you understand what I mean. A living work means like Prabhupada's purports form part of the Bhagavatam, or the commentaries of the Acharyas form part of the Bhagavatam. As far as when the Bhagavatam was written, now we know the Bhagavatam has been passed down through the disciplic succession, but the Bhagavatam started with four verses, which are the nutshell verses spoken by Krishna or Vishnu, Aham Evasame Bhagre Nanyad Yat Sadasad Puram. And they were expanded from that point forward. So as far as when it was actually written down, I mean, that's not mentioned. And it didn't need to be written down previous to Kali Yuga. I mean, the Bhagavatam was there before Kali Yuga, but it didn't need to be written down because people had good brains. They could remember. Who actually wrote it? You know, wrote the first version? I don't know. Now, Vyasadeva, we say Vyasadeva compiled it. Vyasadeva compiled it after being instructed by Narada Muni. That's what we say. But whether it was written down by Vyasadeva or dictated by Vyasadeva or remembered by someone else and actually written down, I don't have that information unless someone else here has that information. But the Bhagavatam is eternal. It can be hundreds of cantos. Much more than we have now. So, but the Bhagavatam is compiled by Śrīla Vyāsadeva. Sometimes people say that Vyāsadeva is the author of the Bhagavatam, but actually he's the compiler. There's two words, samas and vyas. Vyas means dividing. You understand? He divided the Vedic literatures. You know, first he compiled, the story's there in the Bhagavatam itself. First he compiled the four Vedas, then the Upanishads, Vedanta Sutra, and then the Itihasas, especially the Mahabharata. And then you have that whole interaction in the Bhagavatam described between him and his spiritual master, Narada Muni, who chastises him for not directly pointing out the devotional service of the Supreme Lord, and for compiling the Mahabharata for less intelligent persons, but in one sense, almost misleading less intelligent persons into misunderstanding what was the actual purpose of life. Because if you read the whole Mahabharata, I mean, as a devotee, I can read the whole Mahabharata and see Krishna there, you know, obviously. But if you read the Mahabharata, not you, but sorry. But if I'm using you in a general sense, that if someone ordinarily reads the Mahabharata, they won't come to the conclusion that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They may come to the conclusion that Krishna, he's pretty tricky, you know, and there was a lot of mystic things. Can lift a hill. But it's not, you won't, in some of the versions of the Mahabharata, you won't come to that conclusion. So Vyasadeva was chastised by Narada Muni for apparently misleading people. And so therefore, Vyasadeva was instructed to compile the Bhagavatam. So he compiled the Bhagavatam. The Mahabharata, the Bhagavad Gita is part of the Mahabharata. As far as I know, it's part of the Mahabharata, but it was actually always passed down to cyclic succession, so the Bhagavad Gita has not changed. You know, this is actually, Bhagavad Gita means the song of Krishna, the song of the Lord. So it was considered the very essence of the Mahabharata. But the rest of the Mahabharata, I mean, you can really get confused when you read all these stories about Bhima marrying a Rakshasa. You know, it's interesting, you know, obviously. Bhima kills the Rakshasa's brother, Hidimba, and then he marries a Rakshasa. I mean, it's a really interesting story. And he has a son, Ghatotkacha, and Ghatotkacha grows up 10 seconds after he's born. It's like better than Star Wars. And so, but where's Krishna? You know, I understand Krishna's the chariot driver in the battle of Kurukshetra, guides Arjuna and all those other nice things, but it's not really that clear in the Mahabharata. If you're a devotee, it's actually quite clear. But if you're not, if you try to ascertain, or if you try to ascertain the purpose of the Vedas, like Krishna says in the Gita, Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nish Trigunya Bhavarjuna. Yeah. Oh, yeah, the Mahabharata has Bhagavad Gita inside. No, once they come to that session, they say, this is too philosophical for me. I want to get to the real interesting stuff like Gato Kutch and... isn't it? I mean, just even like when people get this Mahabharata series on in the video, they fast forward through the Bhagavad Gita. Isn't that true? They say, okay, let's finish with the Bhagavad Gita. Let's start with the nice killing stuff after this. Yes, they were passed on. The Vedas were passed on. Like I said, Vyasadeva didn't actually write the Vedas. He compiled them, and they were passed as Shruti Dhara. They were passed on by memorization. But the interesting thing about the four Vedas, the Rig, Atharva, Yajur, and Samaveda, is that they were not only passed on by memorization, but the exact meter and, you know, method of pronunciation was passed on. The other Vedic literatures, it wasn't so important that you had to pronounce everything properly. I mean, at least the meter. You know, like you have a song with a certain meter, it means a certain beat, like this, da, 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 da. Like for example, in the Brahma Samhita, Chintamani Prakata Sadma Shakalpa Pariksha. Chintam, etc. You see, the meter was actually part of the procedure of learning, and that was done in the Gurukulas, that the students could actually repeat exactly the way the guru stated. And in the Ramayana, you have information about that. When Lav and Kush learned the Ramayana from Valmiki, that they were able to repeat exactly as Valmiki taught them, and then they repeated that in front of Lord Ram. And then Lord Ram was impressed by that. So that's... But we don't have too many people like that nowadays. Therefore, we need computers. Right? Because without a computer, we can't remember anything. Or I need e-books. That's right. That's right. Prabhupada said only a handful, even when Krishna was on the planet, only a handful actually knew who he was. But this is revealed by the sages. Vedeshu durlabham adurlabham atma bhakto govinda madhipurusham tamaham bhajami, right? Vedeshu durlabham. You can't, and actually Krishna says in the Gita, trigunya vishaya veda nis trigunya bhavarjana, that the Vedas are mainly meant for those who are in Maya. That's Krishna's statement for those in the three modes of nature. Let's see if we have a question from our people online. Give me 1 second before we end. It's almost time to end. Hold on to it. Whoops, I have to mute people. Allow participants to unmute. Wait a second. There we go. Okay, does anyone online have a question?
I have a question, Gurudev. Oops. Well, I don't have to ask it. I can let someone else go first, but I had a question. It's Krishna Priya.
Why don't you? I know, I can tell who it is. You are loud.
Really? It must be the connection. I'm talking really low.
Yeah, okay. So what's your question?
Okay, well, my question is, it's like when I was reading about this pastime, it, like Srinivas, everyone kept telling him, hurry quick and go to Vrindavan because Sanatana and Rupa Goswami are going to leave soon. You know, they kept telling him someone will leave soon. So we know it's pastime that things happen the way they happen. And when he got there, that Sanatana had left and then Rupa had left. And then even because on the way, he kept going on pilgrimage. He kept stopping along the way and he wanted to visit all the different places of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. Yeah. But then he gets there, like we, you know, and Gadara Pandit can't even really teach him because he's in so much separation. So my question is, like, wouldn't you think, like, that Srinivas just thought I was instructed to go right away, but I didn't. I thought I had to make all these stops along the way, and now everybody I was supposed to meet is gone.
Well, he couldn't keep himself from stopping because those were ecstatic stops on the way.
Yeah, they were wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, how could he stop and not see Vishnu Priya and not see Sita Devi, you know, Dvaitacharya's wife, and not see Vasudha and Janava? I mean, that would have been bad etiquette.
And Ishana.
Yeah, and all these other personalities. Okay?
Yes, Gurudev.
All right. One other question from the audience on the internet. No other questions from those on the internet. So, anyways. Oh, my God. Who's phone? So, anyway, so today, do you have any announcements? No? So, next week, we are having, what, Tulsi Shaligram Vivaha? It's just going to be online for those of you who are local because of the increasing incidence of the coronavirus. So it's not going to be in person, except for those who are going to be performing this Tulsi Shaligram Vivaha. And it's going to be what time? To be decided. We might do it midday or? Yeah, we might do it. We might do it midday. So it's going to be Tulsi Shaligram Vivaha. There's a devotee is getting initiated and also married on that day. Adi Purusha is getting married on that day. And his parents agree. Oh, yeah. Rahul. Yeah. He's going to be in the sacrifice. And Advaita Chandra's grandmother is going to take initiation on that day. And then Tulsi and Shaligram will be getting married. So I'm not sure whether we'll do it here or in the hall. That's up to Aditya to see. Here would be better. The internet connection is better, especially if not many people are here. And we're not sure of the time. We'll be
sending out the email.
The email will be sent out and the information on WhatsApp will be sent out to everybody. So I think we're going to end right now. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai, Gaur.